This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Anyone else feel like a business class required in your schooling curriculum would have been massively helpful? Because same. We went to school to become therapists, and here we are 10 years later, really noticing the void in our knowledge on the business side of therapy, which is why we love our Masterclass membership. Masterclass has truly increased our confidence in running our therapy practice, The Therapy Group. Pros like Chris Voss, Robin Roberts, Daniel Pink, and Mark Cuban have filled that void and taught us so much about decision-making, negotiating, maximizing our time, and effective communication. This year, you too can learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving, Masterclass actually helps you do it. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. masterclass.com/shrinkchicks.
Welcome to Shrink Chicks.
I'm Emily Beerley.
And I'm Jennifer Chaikin.
And we're licensed marriage and family therapists and owners of The Therapy Group.
We're on a mission to make therapy and therapeutic topics more relatable and accessible.
So stay tuned, because in order to grow yourself, you gotta know yourself. Hey.
Hi. I didn't get to check my hair yet.
Oh, hold on. At the beginning of every episode, now that we're on YouTube and doing reels on video, Jen doesn't have to check her hair. So everyone give her a moment. Are you done?
I'm ready. Sorry.
How are you?
That's really important for me.
It's these are our February episodes.
I'm warm. I think that's what's important.
Yeah. Okay. So we bulk record episodes now, right? So like it's the end of January. So don't move the mic.
I am sorry.
When we're already recording.
I need my coffee too. I just was not ready. I'm sorry, everyone.
All right, Ben. Just cut, honestly, all of this garbage out. Okay. So it's February.
Yes.
No, it's the end of January. So we both record everything for February. And of course, then we just got a nor'easter snow here in Pennsylvania, and then the heat broke in our office. So if you're watching us on YouTube or in our reels or anything, you will see that we're in a different place than usual. This is actually my office. This is like where I do therapy with clients.
So nice.
Not our typical recording spot. So
no,
hey,
it is not.
This is a look into my POV, baby.
This is where we used to do jumping jacks.
A lot of jumping jacks have happened in this room. Okay, so hey, today's episode, sibling Q&A. We had so many responses from the sibling episode that we just decided to do like a Q&A box, and we're going to just answer any questions that came in.
Let's go for
it. All right, then we reviewed zero of. All right.
Yeah, we did not look at a single question.
Okay, can sibling birth order? Okay. You choose one, girlfriend.
Okay. All right. I love my brother, but I don't like him at all. Tips for respectful boundaries.
Well, I guess the question would be like, what do you need boundaries from, right? Like, is this, right? Like, do they say inappropriate things? Do they not take your no? Like, I would need some more information about like what the boundaries are. But in general, the reality is like, even with our families, relationships have conditions. And you have to decide like, what are the conditions of my relationship? And what does the dislike mean for me versus what does the love mean for me?
And I just want to validate the fact that it's completely okay to love your brother but not like them or any family member, because in the end, you don't really choose your family.
Not at all. You do not choose them literally at all.
At all. But you could choose your chosen family, like your friendships.
And so you might have to say like, yeah, like, do I have other chosen brothers in my life?
Right. Are there other needs that I get fulfilled from friends that maybe I would expect to get from a brother relationship that I'm not getting, that maybe I can get fulfilled in other ways? But yeah, I think that's a good question. What are the boundaries that you might need? And it's okay for your relationship to look different than maybe what you expected it to look like.
Okay.
Your turn.
Can sibling birth order impact you outside of family dynamics as an adult? Yes, it can.
Yes.
Yes, it can. Okay, here's when it becomes like very interesting, which is that like who you were in your family is also going to be a role that you take on. And we have another episode this month about family roles and dysfunction in family roles. And this goes into it, right? So if in my family, I am always the peacekeeper, most likely I'm going to do that outside. And so when you talk about the sibling birth order, like, right, we take the oldest, someone who tends to be a little bit more controlled, a little bit more rigid, follow the rules. Guess what? You're probably then going to do that. My favorite example is like, you know, like class projects, when you had to do a group project. Whoever you are in a group project probably relates to your birth order.
Who are you in a group project?
Who are you in a group project, right?
No, so no, like specifically, who are you?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
I would always take on like one very significant part and just do my part and disappear.
I like that. I think I would do it actually exactly the same. Well, I would kind of, I'm into like collaborating, but I would never be the one that was like, I'll do everything. And I'll just be like, I'll pick my part and do it by myself.
Yes.
And then bring it back to the group. I was never anxious about like what everyone else was doing. You know, some people feel like they need control yes. over the entire group project.
Well, some people really were big jerks in a group project and were not responsive. And so I understand why people get slightly anxious about that.
Yeah.
For that person that disappears. I also understand why somebody disappears. But I would also say, right, like the other thing about me in a group project was like I would try to be the person who doesn't organize everything, but I often ended up as the person who organized everything.
That does not surprise me at all.
Because I never volunteer. Okay, so this is actually very funny. So I made my husband watch Yellow Jackets with me. So we're obsessed with the show Yellow Jackets.
Did you finish it with him?
Not yet. No. So we're obsessed with the show Yellow Jackets. If you haven't seen it, please watch it. A little bit gory and gruesome, but super good. So I'm remaking my husband rewatch it. Wait, no. I'm rewatching it with my husband. That's how you say it. Mm-hmm. And he was like, who would you be? Which character? Like, who would you be on the deserted island? I said, I would be Van because she has some good stuff to say, but she sticks her nose elsewhere.
Huh. I'd probably be Misty.
No, you wouldn't. Misty's the best character. You wish you were fucking Misty.
I just feel like maybe I would get to that island and just completely lose it. You know what I mean?
You wish you were Misty. She's so insane. I love her so much. So, right. So like any of these things, who would I be on a desert island? Who would I be in a group project? So yes, your sibling birth order can impact you outside of family dynamics as an adult, but you also are allowed to intentionally and consciously change your role in any dynamic at any time.
I think that your recognition, I think first of how your family birth order has affected you and how you bring it into your relationships, whether it be romantic relationships, friendships, group projects, whatever. I think that's the first step. Like, where did this come from for me? Why did I feel like I had to be the peacekeeper in my family based on my birth order? And ask yourself the question, is that role still serving me in all of these areas? If you can answer that question with, it's no longer serving me, then that's where you can do some real internal work and say, well, how do I challenge this? What can I do differently? Do I necessarily have to keep the peace anymore? Or is it just a role that I feel comfortable in?
All right. You're up.
Shit. Why am I so competitive with my siblings?
I have a theory.
Go.
Okay. So my theory is, how did you... One, are you competitive by nature, right? Are you competitive in other relationships in your life? Are you judgmental towards yourself? Do you do a lot of comparison? I'd ask yourself first. And then I would also say, was there comparison that your parents put on you or extended family members put on you growing up, right? If you were always compared to, and I've even heard of people going, like being like 2 grades behind of their sibling and then like showing up to English class and their English class was like, oh, I hope you're as good as Thomas was, right? So like even teachers can put this on to
us
at a young age. It doesn't have to necessarily be your parents, but did you often get compared? And I think when that is there, there is a feeling of competitiveness.
You know what I think can be really tough too, being a twin? Because you often get compared to each other.
You're often thought of as simply the twins.
Right. Not just the twins. You're not an individual person.
Yes.
But, you know, constantly trying to individuate yourself. And, you know, like when you have twins and you dress them up the same when they're really young, it's so much easier, especially if you're identical twins, for people to compare the two of you. Oh, like this one's really athletic and this one likes drawing, whatever. But you get very stuck in those roles as opposed to you figuring out for yourself, like what actually works for me. So really looking at how were you compared to each other growing up? Is there anything about your birth order or how close you are in age that maybe led people to compare the two of you more? And how does that show up in your relationships? And I like the thing, are you competitive by nature?
Yes. Did you know that, so my dad was, my uncle is deceased, but when he was alive, they were only 2 years apart. Yeah. Did you know that my grandmother dressed them up identical their entire childhood?
I did not know
that. Not twins, still dressed them up identical.
Well, how do you think that that affected your dad?
They had a very tumultuous relationship.
There you go.
Very different people.
Very interesting. I mean, I could really dig into that. Maybe we should bring your dad on.
Don't even offer him that. He would be thrilled, I'm sure, at the opportunity. I'm sure thrilled. Okay. Somebody, I just want to answer this because I think it's funny. Does birth order actually matter? I don't know. Matter for what? I mean, like, does it matter to you? Does it matter in society? Like, I don't really know.
Like, does it actually affect you? Like, I think it depends. I think it, you know, we say this about everything and we're so sorry because it's such a cop-out answer that, like, yeah, we can generalize how birth order might affect you, but it doesn't necessarily mean it spans across every single situation.
Yes.
So if what we say doesn't necessarily connect to you, then just, like, let it go.
Just ignore it, simply. But also, I mean, one of the things we talked about, right, when there is, like, we're sitting here talking about, like, 10 age gaps, blended families, like, yeah, like, this information is not going to pertain the same way. If there was a sibling with a disability, right, like, any of these things, a sibling who had health issues, any of these things, like, that can impact the relationship, too.
Is it okay to not be close to your sibling? Yes.
Yes, period. Nothing else.
That is it.
You have full permission.
But I wonder, because you're asking this question, has someone put pressure on you to be close to your sibling?
Okay. Don't you feel like, I feel like I've said this in another episode, don't you feel like the obsession, like, we have these obsessions with, like, certain people, like the Kardashians, or, like, they're so close or something, and it's, like, really idealized this idea of, like, being, like, ultra close. Now, part of this is also a cultural thing as well. Like, in certain cultures, you're incredibly close to your siblings. That's not typically everywhere.
Right. And is it coming from your, you know, your parents' idea of, like, what you guys, what kind of relationship the two of you should have? Because either they had that relationship growing up or they really didn't have that relationship growing up, right? Where they're saying, I didn't have this, so I really want the two of you to have this, or I don't want this to happen. So is the pressure that maybe you're getting from caregivers to be really close to your sibling actually coming from their internalized struggle with their own sibling relationships or not having a sibling, right? There's so many things you can think about in that.
And that's what we call projection.
I did a dance. You couldn't see it because you're singing to the...
What was it?
It was like a shoulder dance.
That
like,
was
some... I don't have a lot of movement because of the mic.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, don't
so,
fuck the mic.
Just I only mic. Had my shoulders.
Don't fuck the mic either. Okay. Why does trauma in childhood so differently affect the different age siblings? So yeah, it's the analogy we've used before, but the car accident analogy, right? Which is like, I can be in a car accident with the same exact car with four different people, and everyone comes out with different injuries. So you could have a completely different experience than the same people you grew up in the same house as and have very different like beliefs and understandings about like what that experience was.
And factors that could affect that include your age and your ability to process things developmentally, what kind of support that you had at the time, where your parents were in their parenting of you. There's so many different factors that could play a role in that. And so that's how trauma affects people differently. Period. On to you.
Can you be codependent with a sibling?
You can be codependent with anyone or anything.
Your dog. Jen's talking to herself right now.
I am. It's like I'm looking in a mirror.
Yeah, you can be codependent with absolutely
We're talking to
anything.
Each other.
Yeah. Oh, yikes.
Ooh.
Yeah, you can be codependent with absolutely anything.
But the question is, how is it affecting you, right?
Yep.
How is the codependency with your sibling affecting you? So 1,000% you can be codependent with your sibling.
Okay. Somebody had a really funny question, which is, can you explain that the middle child is not that troubled? I love middle children.
Me too.
I think that they get a bad rap because everyone's like, oh, middle child syndrome. I think that they tend to be the ones who are the most themselves because they had to be, right? Because like sometimes they did kind of forgotten about.
It's okay.
This is the hard first recording of the day. So, they're not that troubled. Middle children are fucking awesome. Anyone can be fucking awesome,
I feel
right?
like middle children, the reason why they get a bad rap is they're just trying to speak their mind. They're trying to be heard, right? And so that's why people are like, oh, they're so troubled. Like, no, they're just trying to express themselves.
That's just called advocating.
Yeah, they're just advocating for themselves. So I think the reframe is that, no, middle children, you are not troubled. It is okay that you have a want to be heard and a want to express yourself and for people to validate that. And I think that being stuck in the middle helps people invalidate that in a lot of ways, because they're just like, oh, it's the middle child. That's why they're causing so much trouble.
But there's like a stigma against everything. Everyone's like, oh, she's an oldest child. She's a middle child. Or she's the youngest. An only child.
Or there's the youngest. She's a she twin, gets right? anything she wants. Yeah.
Stigma we just like want to put any label on anything of why there's an issue.
But I do think middle children get like a really bad rap.
Oh my God. They for sure do.
I know.
Yeah.
If you listen to one of our latest episodes titled Em and Jen Fall Apart, you know the current feelings of burnout that we're both facing. Running our business, the therapy group, keeping up with the podcast, and enduring a house renovation leaves little time for grocery shopping, meal prepping, and cooking. So we are extremely thankful for our sponsor, Hungry Root. When I received my first delivery of the Hungry Root box, it felt like a breath of fresh air. Hungry Root saves me so much time and offers customizable options. Plus, with perfectly portioned ingredients, I'm wasting far less food than I would if I were left to my own devices in the kitchen. No more throwing away wilted veggies or expired condiments lurking in the back of my fridge. Each order is fully customizable, so you can take their suggestions or choose anything you want. They've got fresh produce, high-quality meat and seafood, smoothies, sweets, ready-to-eat meals, kids' snacks and meals, vitamins and supplements, and much more. I discovered Three Little Pigs, spinach, feta, and egg bites in my last delivery, and they are my new obsession. Also, Hungry Root's coconut curry sauce is not to be missed. Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's got to taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Shrink Chicks listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you. Anyone else go through soap and cleaning products insanely quick? At both my house and at our business, we're constantly replacing plastic bottles. Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? And if that's not bad enough, most cleaning formulas are 90% water, which is heavy to ship, leading to excessive carbon emissions. That's why we are thrilled to introduce our newest sponsor, Blue Land. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. The idea is simple. They offer refillable cleaning products with a beautifully cohesive design that looks great on your counter. Fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. You will never have to grab bulky cleaning supplies on your grocery run. Refills start at just $2.25. You can even set up a subscription or buy in bulk for an additional savings. From cleaning sprays to hand soap, toilet bowl cleaner, and laundry tablets, all Blue Land products are made with clean ingredients you can feel good about. And I'll be honest, I was a bit skeptical at first. Can eco-friendly products really tackle tough messes? Well, Blue Land proved me wrong. The products I received, like their multi-service cleaner and bathroom cleaner, were powerful. Grime, grease, and dirt don't stand a chance. Blue Land is not only good for the planet, but also for your wallet. And the starter kit I received was beautifully packaged. The bottles are sleek and sturdy, and the scents are amazing. Lemongrass, a lavender eucalyptus, and fresh lemon. Or you can choose fragrance-free. Blue Land has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/shrinkchicks. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/shrinkchicks for 15% off. That's blueland.com/shrinkchicks to get 15% off.
Okay.
I think that comes from the Brady Bunch. Like Jan. I really think Jan, you know.
Marsha.
Yeah, like I think there was like, when I think about that, I think about the Brady Bunch. I don't know why. Do you ever get that? Or is that just
no,
me?
No, like no, Jan no. got. Right. Well, because I keep thinking about when she made up her boyfriend, George Glass.
Exactly.
Right? Because everyone's like, Jan wouldn't have a boyfriend.
Right. And it's such, like.
Why and you want to know she? What else was very interesting about Jan being the middle child in the Brady Bunch is she always had her first two, she had these two pieces of hair that were curled in the front. So she had like this front, like infantilized look while the mature back, like she was stuck in between being a child and an adult.
That was so deep.
I think I've probably only ever seen like one, that one Brady Bunch movie I'm talking
the movie,
about.
I know, the movie was really good.
Yeah, right? So like, I know, maybe Jan did fuck it. But then who was the middle child boy though? No one was shitting on him.
I just think Jan encompassed the middle child. I have no idea who the middle child boy was, but I feel like Jan was just like encompassed it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, we could talk about Encanto. Oh no, we'll talk about Encanto on
I have so much dynamics. To say about Encanto, but I watched Encanto and I cried.
So if you're listening to today's episode, can you please watch Encanto so that you can get catch up? Yes. Okay. You're up.
Okay. Can brothers and sisters be close? Seems only sisters or only brothers are always closer.
You're so close.
I am very close with my brother.
Yeah.
But I would say it wasn't always the case. Like, there was times, you know what it made me think of when we talked about do siblings have to be close? And we talked about, like, the pressure that parents might put on closeness. Mm-hmm. There were times in which me and my brother weren't close throughout our lives. Like, we got in a huge fight when I moved to New York because he wouldn't see me and he lived there. I didn't see him for, like, months.
Why didn't he see you?
I don't know. He was going through his own stuff. Like, we had a little bit of a separation.
But you needed him.
But I needed him. And my, my parents tried to get involved. And they brought, because I was really upset. I was like, I'm not going to Brent, whatever it was. And they tried to bring him over without my consent. And I was really pissed. But anyway, we worked through that. But point of the story is brothers and sisters can be really close.
Yeah.
And I think it just depends on, we are very similar in a lot of ways. We're also very different in a lot of ways, but I really feel like we can, anytime we talk, we're just analyzing shit. That's all we do.
I also think that when they talk about, like, in this question, they're saying, like, basically the same gender siblings are always closer than opposite gendered siblings. And I think the interesting thing about that is probably because parents, without even realizing, did that in younger years, where, like, they always, you know what I mean, like, the girls always were in the same activities, the boys were always in the same activities, right? They always treated them the same,
right?
Where I do think that girls and boys are often treated very differently in families,
right?
And so part of that is, like, I would ask yourself, like, what was the difference in your family of how that was treated,
how you were treated, treated, right? Like, where they're like, oh yeah, he can do that, but you can't because you're a girl.
Yeah,
got that a lot.
Okay. I really like this question.
I'm ready.
Why is being the only daughter like being the oldest, and why are males so infantilized? Okay.
That's a deep
question. So let's talk about why only daughters are treated like an oldest. And part of that is because they're treated more adult-like, right? Because, like, they're used to being around a lot of adults. And don't forget that all oldest children start out as only children at one point. So I think part of it is how they are spoken to from the parents, the responsibility that's put on them, that often only children, specifically, I'm sure only daughters, feel much like the oldest daughter.
I also think women are socialized to be caretakers, mm-hmm. and to take on roles. And especially if they're growing up around adults, that there's this expectation of, like, okay, now you can take on these roles that, because you're a woman, right? There's just so much socialization around it, where men are more socialized to be more individualistic and, kind of separated. And so the infantilized part, it feels like a little bit of a deeper conversation. But interesting question. But I would say just how women are socialized to, I think, lends itself for maybe women to be more parentified.
Yeah.
Especially if they're growing up in an environment where there's no other children.
Yeah. And it's also interesting that, right, like, why are men so infantilized? I wonder if an oldest son of 6 would feel that they're infantilized or something, right? Or, like, an oldest son of even 3 would feel that way. They probably feel like they're always treated older and given more responsibility. But I think that sometimes men can be infantilized.
Well, I wonder if the question is, why are, like, only sons so infantilized? It wasn't written that way. You know what I mean? Because it's like, why are only daughters? Why is being the only daughter like being the oldest? Why are males so infantilized?
Oh, maybe it was.
You know what I mean?
I think the other thing people have to remember is there's a lot of reasons why people have only children. But specifically when we're looking at the reason, if there wasn't an option to have more children, there's a part of you that can infantilize the only child. I know that I do this with my daughter. There is a part, you know what I mean? Like, if we do...
She's so young.
She's so young. But I mean, but, like, even stuff like she, you know what I mean? Like, I, like, want to baby her for forever because I don't know if I'm going to have another baby.
Right. So coming from the fact that it's, like, such a precious time for you.
Right. Where for other people that have kids, have daughters at 3 years old, but also have another child, that oldest daughters get treated, I think, differently than how I treat Millie, because I simply don't know if we're going to have an opportunity to have other kids. It just does, you know what I mean? Like, after everything we've been through, I don't know if it's happening.
Right.
So I know that, like, I don't want her to grow up so fast. Where I think other parents are like, come on, grow up. I got all these other kids here.
Right.
But I'm like, no, 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 no. Need me more. So we all fuck our kids up in their own ways.
It's right. It's just going to happen. And so if you have a child and you're questioning whether you're doing this, it's going to happen whether you like it or not.
And it's also like the most often not intentional, right? Like it's something I have to be highly aware of.
But you're so conscious of it, right? Yes. You're like asking yourself these questions. You're...
Well, I'm also aware because the majority of people I spend time with that are parents have multiple children.
Right.
And so you can see like a clear difference of what that interaction is like.
Right.
Yeah. And it makes you, it does make you highly aware of it.
And I wonder too, you know, if you think about it, like in terms of parenting, if you ask yourself, like, how were you parented based on your gender?
Yeah.
Right. Like, and because you might
have. We always were given more. I feel like I was given more responsibility than my brother.
Me too. I was younger. I think I was expected to like deal with more, to just be like, you have to deal with that, or you just emotionally in some ways. And so.
Where I saw my brother is so fragile.
Right. And so you might parent based on how your parents parented you based on your gender, or parented your siblings based on their gender. So that's something to think about too.
This is why it's so fucking nuanced. So when you say something along the lines of just birth order, you're taking out all the context around it.
Right.
Which is why when we say like, does like birth order actually matter? Like, sure, maybe. But also there's like so much other stuff. Like none of this stuff is like so clear. It's so nuanced and so difficult to
talk about.
That's
why we can have these long ass podcast episodes.
Have to, because an Instagram post doesn't describe this.
No, it doesn't.
That's, you know what I mean? Like we want to be able to like give free accessible information, but like it almost has to be in a format like this, because like you need more than 30 fucking minutes to
do it. You gotta listen to the whole episode.
There we go. That it is. Okay, we have so many more
questions. We have so many questions, I know. Wait, I have one.
Yeah.
How to get over a sibling who is constantly trying to one-up you. Okay. So first I want you to think about, where might that be coming from for your sibling? Why do people feel the need to one-up? And typically it's because they're feeling insecure in some way. They're not feeling comfortable with themselves. And so that's something to process a little bit, because I think we very easily get defensive when we think that, oh, that must be personal to me. Like that must mean I'm not good enough because they're constantly able to one-up me. People who are comfortable with themselves don't feel the need to one-up others. And so that's some internal work to do. I think something you can also point it out and set some boundaries, right? Hey, I notice when I bring an accomplishment up that you often follow that up with your own accomplishment. Sometimes I want the ability to just express what my accomplishment is without hearing about yours. And we can do that at a different time. If you want to tell me about something that you accomplished, can you do that separate from when I'm expressing myself, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a boundary that you can set around it too. But know that it's definitely probably something going on with, something going on with your sibling, that they're not feeling secure enough within themselves.
And you're allowed to speak that. Hey, I love you. I want us to be close. And this really hurts me when you do it.
Boom.
Can you believe we're on year 5 of Shrink Chicks? We have been podcasting since 2019 and have somehow yet to change the photo of us on the cover of the podcast. We are planning a photo shoot in a few weeks so we can finally update our cover art. We both obviously need new outfits for the photo shoot, but really didn't want to break the bank. So thank goodness for Quince, where we can get multiple high-quality outfits for a very reasonable price. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. For the shoot, we want to go with a few different looks, one being monochrome, so I opted for a few key items from Quince's collection, including their Mongolian cashmere tee, classic trouser pant, and structured blazer. I couldn't resist adding their timeless 14 karat gold jewelry pieces to complete my look, because who doesn't love accessorizing? The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, making me feel even better about my purchases. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks.
Okay. Do parents have favorites? Here's where it gets interesting. One, in the short term, yes, but you're looking at it in terms of like favorite means best. There's typically a child a parent relates to the most or maybe admires because they're so different.
Or helps them the most,
grows me and challenges me. So it's not really about like favorites because that's like too binary to like think about it, right? Like who's the favorite and who is not.
Right.
But I think that there is a child who a parent seems to be close with just because the personality gets along or they're very similar to them or they really get them, something along of those lines. Or that child really needs them, fulfills their needs, or is very dependent on them. A lot of times we like that as parents. It makes us feel good.
And so once again, it's something to think about as it's very easy, understandably so, to take that personally, where if your parent is favoring your sibling, to feel like that must mean that I'm not doing something right, or that must mean that I'm bad in some way. No, that it's possible that your sibling is just fulfilling a need for your parent. That's about your parent.
Yeah.
And that is not personal to you.
And it goes back to this thing we talked about in our boundaries episode about boundaries being reciprocal, especially like what are my two caregivers' relationships? And are they disengaged? And then do I have a sibling that allows them to be overly engaged with them, right? Mm. So like, where are they getting those needs met? And sometimes there is like one child that does that for them.
Right. Is the sibling fulfilling something in your parents' relationship?
Yeah.
Which is not healthy.
It's not healthy, but it is normal.
It happens.
Right? Like, it's not very, necessarily healthy,
and that's
but it's
what
really
we call
fucking normal.
Triangulation, right? Is your sibling being triangulated into your parents' relationship in some way? And I could see how that would very easily make you feel like, oh, they're the favorite.
Yeah.
They're needed more.
Yep. Yeah. Advice for siblings growing apart and not including each other in their life anymore.
Well, my sense is that because you asked this question, it might be something that's hurting you in some way, right? That would be my guess. Yeah. I don't want to assume.
Yes.
But I think that that's something you can bring up to your sibling if you feel like you want a closer relationship. To be able to say like, hey, I noticed that in the past, we used to call each other and invite each other over, and we're not really doing that anymore. I just want to check in and see what's up. See if you can have a conversation about it, because sometimes that underlying tension can build and build and build if it's not being discussed. Mm-hmm. And so to bring it to their attention, and I wonder if maybe they're feeling a similar way. Is there something that the two of you haven't discussed, haven't talked about? Was there some sort of tension in the relationship? So I think bring it to the surface. Have a conversation about it.
Okay. I want to answer this one.
Okay, go.
I'd love to understand birth order dynamics as an only child. I think this is super interesting because a lot of the birth order dynamics as an only child is actually about what's happening in the full family system. Mm. It's hard to say what that looks like when we don't know what the caregiver system looks like and who they're around, right? If it's an only child of divorced parents, that's very, right? Then you can have a different role for each of your different parents. If your parents are disengaged or cut off emotionally from each other, you could be fully more enmeshed with your parents. If your parents are codependent towards each other, you can maybe feel left out of that dynamic. So a lot of it has to do with what is the full family system dynamic, and then how did you fall and relate into that, right? I know that when my husband and I are going like through like hard shit in our marriage, right? So like, as you guys know, we did an episode about my fertility challenges and miscarriages. I had 3 miscarriages in 2021. It was a bad fucking year. It was a bad year for us, okay? And it was a really bad year for our marriage, right? So who Millie was in, you know what I mean, like my daughter was in that year, is probably different than in our most stable time.
Right.
And so a lot of that is really context dependent.
That was beautiful.
Yeah, shut up. Don't cry or anything.
No, I can't help.
Don't make me feel vulnerable.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Okay. Well.
Where's your mirror neurons? Are you crying yet?
No. It's only if you start crying. I will cry.
You know, Mom.
Immediately.
Cold. I'm stone cold.
How?
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Do you remember the suck it sign? Was that him?
The what?
He would say suck it.
Okay, I was like, that was a joke. I don't know shit about Steve Austin.
Okay, so.
Did you watch wrestling?
No, but when we were in fourth grade, this was like a really big thing. Like, really.
Well, you're much older than me, so I was probably.
I'm so much
not even
older
born
than
yet.
You, so you probably don't remember this. Ellie and I have an inside joke. I'm only a year older than her.
But I like to
but we constantly talk about how much older I am than her. Anyway, Stone Cold Steve Austin did the suck it sign. I don't know if it was him. It might have been someone else. So, but whatever. Kids were doing that in fourth grade.
Yeah, that didn't work out well for him. And did anyone call him a bad role model the way we call like Ariana Grande, huh?
Do people call Ariana Grande a bad role model?
People call every female, Britney Spears, every female right? is a bad Oof. Fucking role model.
Yeah, people were doing the suck it sign. Like, we had no idea what that was. This might not be him, but I know it was a wrestling thing. Anyway.
Well, if it was a male, did anyone call him a bad role Oof. Model? All I want to say. Okay.
How to deal with the whole family just assuming the oldest will always take care of everything? This is such a good question.
Yeah.
We talk a lot about how do you go from a role that you once took on that maybe was serving the family dynamic growing up, right? There was something about it that was survival. Maybe your parents were going through something and so you took care of everything so that everyone survived and so that you got noticed, whatever it was. As we get older, we might continue to assume those roles, and also the people around us assume that we are going to continue to take that on. So it is up to you to start to change that dynamic. The tough thing is that when we start setting boundaries, it means that other people have to also adjust to our boundaries. And that takes time.
Oh, this is when patience is a real bitch, folks.
Real bitch. And so you might set a boundary and it might get pushed up against, right? And you continue to set a boundary, someone pushes because they are used to you being in a very specific role. Mm. And so you have to know that it will take time and time again for you to set this boundary and say, listen, it is not my responsibility to continue to do these things for everyone else, right? Because not only does it put a lot on you, but it also takes responsibility away from everyone else in your family. And so you're not only helping yourself with those boundaries, you're helping the people around you and you're helping your relationships so that you are less resentful in those relationships.
It's unfortunate, it goes back to this idea of like we teach people how to treat us, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and for some families, it's like not an option, right? If I have a parent, a caregiver that has a disability or is incarcerated or is works all the time or is disengaged in some way, you know what I mean? Like, there is shit that you pull up. And so you have to say, what do I do? Because like the reality is like I think that one of the things that I really struggle with modern day psychology is there's a lot about self-healing. Right. I believe that we need other humans.
Totally.
I think that healing.
Just as human beings, we need other humans.
Yes,
it's just
right?
a biological.
And so it doesn't have to be biological family also. It can be chosen family. It can be friendships. You know, any of these things, romantic relationships. But we do need other people,
yeah.
right? It's bullshit to think that we don't. So I think you can do a significant amount of internal healing and you also need to do external healing, mm-hmm. right? And so part of those is recalibrating those dynamics together. So I think you said it perfectly.
Thank you so much.
As always. All right, let's final questions. It's the final
countdown.
Okay.
I was gonna keep going.
Millie does this thing where she, you know, like for like last year, there was like a really thing, like those wooden Bohemian, those wooden like boho beads people would have like on their like counters,
yeah.
you know? All
right, I've always wanted to get
yeah,
one.
Yeah, so we have those. Millie now puts it over her chest diagonally and she goes, skookalayly, skookalayly, skookalayly. I'm playing my skookalayly.
Wow.
And so that's now every time I play air guitar, I think that
also,
I'm
also, let me just mention, every time I see Emily, she has a different child song stuck in her head.
Now, well, I listen to a lot of kids' fucking music. That would be really be why. Okay.
I don't even know what.
I'm youngest, but I feel my family doesn't take me seriously because someone always has more experience.
That's like me having more experience than you because I'm so much older.
That's exactly it.
Right?
Yes. So what would you say to this person? How do you set the boundary?
So, once again, I know we're a broken record, but I think that being able to express that to, and I think that's a common thing when you're the youngest too, to feel like you're not being heard and you're not, you're always seen as the baby and you aren't taken seriously in some way because they have always viewed you as the baby. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something to express, right? Like I recognize that when I bring this up, that everyone's responding to me like I'm, you know, you're not taking me seriously or you're not trusting what I'm saying. And that's really hurtful for me because it's important for you to hear the things that I'm saying. It's really important for me to be able to express myself and for it to be taken seriously. Mm-hmm. I very much felt this as a child. I felt this as an actual child where I was like, I feel
even
like.
Even with you punching through walls.
Yep.
Cooking through walls.
Punching. Can you imagine if I was punching through walls?
I don't even know if you have the upper body strength to punch through walls.
I don't have the upper body strength now, let alone then. But I very much, I remember over and over again saying, stop treating me like a child. And I was a child. And so I think that it's very common as a younger, as a youngest sibling to.
We were like just talking about this in terms of our landlord.
Yeah.
And you were like, I just feel like I need to be taken seriously.
Yeah,
right?
I have an internal thing about that.
You have an introjection.
I have an introject. It's a trigger for me.
Yeah, like that's a huge pain point for you.
Huge pain point. Right? And so
I don't care about that as much.
Yeah, I do.
Right? Like that's something that we do differ on. Like that's not 100%. A big trigger for me. I don't know what mine is at this moment. I can't think of one.
That's okay. Well, it'll probably come out in a different episode, I'm sure. But I think that's a comment to think about. Is that an introject for you too, right? Is that something that you bring into your relationships where you feel like you're not being taken seriously because it's the role that you took growing up? And I think because I was youngest, my brother was also very intelligent. Mm-hmm. I had always felt like, everyone was treating me like a child and it was really important for me to be heard and be taken seriously. So first of all, for this person who wrote this in, totally relate to you. But I think it's something to express. When that changed in my family, I think is when I became a therapist.
Oh, wow.
Really changed.
Dear Em and Jen, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Dear Em and Jen, I have tried in every which way to reconnect with my sibling after a difficult childhood together, and they simply don't seem interested. What should I do?
Oof. First of all, we very much feel for you. And that can be really, really painful because it's someone you grew up with, someone you want some sort of connection with, and they're not reciprocating the wish to have the same type mm-hmm. of relationship that you have. And so this touches a little bit on an episode that we are going to do, which is radical acceptance. Mm. Because in this moment, it sounds like you're doing what you can do to express yourself and say, I really want this relationship, to reach out to your sibling and say, this is really important to me. The thing that you cannot control is whether your sibling wants the same type of relationship. And so the question is, in this moment, if you're doing everything you can do in order to vulnerably express how important your relationship is with them, if they're not reciprocating or if they have no interest, this is where radical acceptance comes in, at least for the moment.
And radical acceptance can also contain grieving of the unmet expectations, right? Mm. Give yourself a place to grieve. I really wanted a different sibling relationship than the one that I have. And here, when I see other people, I compare to that. When I see brothers and sisters laughing together, I feel very sad. Let yourself have that pain and feel through it to get to the other side. And that's today's episode.
Today's episode.
So if you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review.
Is that like a falsetto?
I don't even know what the fuck a falsetto is.
You took singing lessons.
Singing lessons. I don't know. I was too scarred for my singing experience. Oh my God, we'll have to tell a funny story about that in the next episode.
Next one. Okay.
So if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate, review, subscribe, follow an Apple Podcast, rate us now on Spotify. Please send this episode to a friend. If you want to check us out in our comfy loungewear we're wearing today, please check us out on YouTube to see our hilarious mannerisms. And as always, thank you for being here. We love you. And to grow yourself, you got to know yourself. We'll see you next week.